Welcome to 2024, the official launch of the podcast that never was.
Transitioning out of the
Is this the
last
official
tapes.
launch? Well, actually, I said the name incorrectly. It's actually the pod that never was.
Now, then, this is the part that is. I don't care what you're saying. But today, it's a great day because our bellies are full. We have the none other than
Chef Tafadzwa,
Chef.
aka the Ankara chef. Did I say that
Hey.
right?
The Ankara chef.
The
That's
Ankara
you
chef,
got it.
exactly.
Pleasure to have you, the Ankara chef.
Happy to be here.
Hey. How's it going, man? How's it going? How's it
Oh,
going? The food was good. I'm gonna say, sorry, people who are listening. The food was good. If you
why are you apologizing? We sh
for
There's
good
no
food.
for good food. Like, we should be saying thank you,
I am
Chef T.
apologizing that you will never taste this food.
Be honest, did you expect it to be good?
Yeah, I mean, so T Mac over here spoke very highly of you. And so when I hit you up, I was like, it must be good because it came with high recommendation. And I can say that you matched all expectations, probably exceeded, if I'm going to be honest.
But before we go into the food, no, actually we have to get into the food. I'd like to ask, for the food that we had today, because we do have pictures. Chef, could you just tell us what you made and what inspired you?
Okay, so I think today it was more what I call traveling without a passport, which is basically me transporting my clients, or in this case, my friends, to different locations around the world. So we had, obviously, we're in Maryland, so had to have some crab, but I did it in Singapore. So it's Singapore crab. And then we had some lamb. We went to the Mediterranean, maybe a bit of Greece. We had some lamb chops in a yogurt sauce. Then we had rice. This one is more, I don't know, maybe it's my own interpretation, or maybe
That was
let's say.
Zimbabwean rice. That's
Yeah.
what I can tell
So it was actually,
you.
you came here late. You need to hear the process of
Okay.
how he made the
So
rice.
I'll listen. I'll listen. I'll listen.
So it was toasted rice first. So you toast your rice in like just a dry pot, just toast it until it's nice and brown, hence the color. What you're trying to achieve there is to get some nuttiness. So when you toast rice, you get a nutty flavor that comes out. So that was the point. And then you cook it normally, like so. You toast it, and then your water and your salt, and that's it. So we had toasted rice for starch. We also had some pita bread. So going to the Mediterranean again. And then we had some green beans with some parmesan, so a bit of Italy. And then finally we had a salad of asparagus and orange with the orange dressing.
Chef, you made the pita from scratch. Could you explain the process of
That
how
pita was
this?
from scratch?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not only that, and I have to say I'm maturing because when he said nutty, I didn't say pause, which I think is growth. So,
These days
but
we say
anyways,
no Diddy.
I no Diddy,
These days we say no
but I
Diddy.
digress. Please let us know how you made the pita from
So the
scratch.
pita is basically flour, yogurt, a bit of yeast,
Wow.
salt, and that's about it. Knead it into a dough, let it rise, then divide it into bowls, and then roll it out flat and in a dry pan once again. And that's it. And we dusted this one with some herbs, so it was just parsley with some garlic and a bit of olive oil just to give it some
Yeah.
herbaciousness.
No, that
That's
was a great
fantastic.
finish,
Listen,
honest.
Chef, I'm going to be honest with you. The pita bread was nice, but for me, the rice. For
Yeah,
me personally.
like a true symbol.
Wait.
If
Listen,
it's not rice, it's salsa. Don't try
you know,
to
when I was a kid, I would eat the rice and I would wait for, the pot. You know, so the pot would stay on the stove, and then I would scrape the rice.
Oh, the rice, the burnt rice at the bottom.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
So that's what
that's a thing, out. Yeah. So like, even with sadza, it's a thing, the burnt sadza.
Makes sense.
It was perfect for me, the rice.
So it was toasted.
Yeah.
It was fire.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna figure out a way to make that for myself.
You got to toast it.
I'm going to toast rice.
So, I know we had chatted about this earlier, that you are an Afrofusion chef, right? So let's take it back to like what your journey on how you actually became a chef and like what piqued your interest into that.
Okay, so I always say my journey kind of moved from curiosity to passion. Hmm. So simply, I saw someone frying an egg in a way that I'd never seen before. Sunny side up, pan tilted, lathering the egg with oil to cook the top. And for me, that was like, okay, I didn't know that you can do that. It was the only eggs I knew were scrambled with tomato and egg. That's what we do. So it was like a curiosity moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I became curious about food.
Okay.
Started watching Food Network and all this stuff. And then at the time, I was studying finance, actually. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Botswana to stay with my dad. And then I started experimenting with my dad, just putting mazoi orange in stews and stuff like that.
Mazoi
orange in stew.
Yeah.
No, that's very experimental.
Citrus. Explain. That's very
controversial. At that point, I was just trying to think like mazoi sweet, a bit of citrus, what would come out? So at the point, I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, it came out well. As my guinea pig then suggested that I go to chef school. It was my dad. So
yeah.
I then went to chef school in South Africa in the Western Cape. I did what is called French contemporary cuisine, which is just, you know, the French are the ones that start this whole restaurant thing.
Yeah.
So just teaching you the basics and the processes of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I worked at the lodge in Swellendam, once again in the Western Cape, Oliver State. They changed their farmhouse into a guest house.
Okay.
So it was 5-star, 5 rooms. So just you know, the right kind of place to start. It was, once again, I didn't want to be a chef. It wasn't something I grew up wanting to be.
Mm-hmm.
This was a curiosity that I was kind of fulfilling. And so I did that. Then I had the privilege of working for the ambassador of Zimbabwe in Rome, Italy, as a chef.
Wow.
And that's where I encountered a dish of guru, which is tripe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was cooked in white wine, anchovies, dry mint,
chili
flakes.
You're saying very controversial things.
Right? Wait, hold on. First of all, I want it to be known, Chef T, I do not like guru.
He doesn't count.
Salad.
I do not like tribe.
He doesn't salad.
Count. Tribe. Well, we got to, if you're going to explain, you got to explain what a salad is to our English listeners, to the audience.
Yes. So
before you slander me.
This is a very controversial slander, actually.
Yeah.
So to our listeners who do not know what a salad is, in Zimbabwe, a salad would be someone of a bourgeoisie upbringing. Someone that lives in a bourgeoisie part of town. Bougie is the term, I think, that the new kids...
Listen, nobody likes a salad. We like the meat, we like the starch.
It's a term... Wait, let me finish. But it's a term that comes mostly because bougie people eat salads and not bougie people don't
I think
eat
that's
salads.
A fair assessment. I don't know what he's talking about.
So,
but that's a fair... What
I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this. I eat tripe. So you got to understand. Hey. You got to understand what you're eating.
Dollar tripe.
I've tried it. It doesn't work for me the same way. I feel the same way about mazondo.
Mm-hmm.
Pig's feet. I don't touch any of that stuff.
You are bugging.
I'm just letting you guys know.
Blasphemy.
It's just a, like, that's my palate. It is what it is.
Your palate is weak.
Clearly.
Palate is weak.
This palate says something, Dale.
Your palate is.
So I like that. You're damn right.
This palate says something, Dale.
Your palate is white boy, man.
Amount something.
Get out of here.
Just feel chill. Yeah. No race calling here.
but here's the truth, right? So all I'm saying is just not for me. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying anything in a negative connotation. It's just not for me. So I am very curious for Chef Diankara, aka I'm going to call him Chef T because I like Chef T. Why, like, how did you even experiment with tripe, or did somebody else experiment with tripe?
Okay, so that wasn't me. I went to a friend of mine, said, let's go to a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And that was a dish in an Italian restaurant in a quaint Italian town.
An Italian, wow. I didn't know Italian people
eat tripe over there.
So that's the thing. So that actually, I think, was the genesis of my fusion. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it then, mm-hmm, but at the time, I just thought, wait, so we can cook our ingredients in a different way. Mm-hmm. Just like the egg, the tripe was another curiosity moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's where my fusion was born, because I was thinking tripe is quintessentially a Zimbabwean ingredient, which it's not.
Right.
In my mind, in my ignorance, it was. So this Zimbabwean ingredient was being cooked in a different way, hence fusion. Mm. I didn't know it at the time. Maybe two, 3 years later, then it clicked. But
So I got to ask a question. All the tripe that we eat over here is bleached. Was that tripe bleached?
Or? It was bleached.
It was bleached.
Yeah.
So that removes that awful smell. That.
So I think every continent. So,
yeah. Okay.
And sorry to cut you off, Chef, but I think every continent bleaches their tripe besides Africa.
Yeah, why would you bleach it?
I mean, cows eat
but grass. The flavor is all in what you bleach out of it. Exactly. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly. It was in the grass, man.
Yeah, no. Hey.
And people actually don't, you're not supposed to clean it fully.
What?
I'll tell you
that you have that, you know, that whole
But hold on, cows eat grass.
Oh, no.
So, I'll tell you this. I've once had fresh goo. Yeah, it smells like...
All
right, it smells like, you know, when a lawnmower is done, like fresh grass.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's different stomachs, so you're going to encounter different kind of things.
Four different stomachs in a cow.
In different tribes, like honeycomb, is that Bible one that looks like pages. So it's different kind of stomachs there as well.
That's interesting.
And traditionally, there's one, I don't know. Where I grew up in the rural areas, they used to say that if you want to learn how to whistle, you need to eat part raw, like after slaughtering the cow, you'd eat tripe raw. I mean, they'll clean it out, but
wait, when you say whistle, murgura,
whistling, like murizo,
but murizo, bora, cannot murizo,
which is like whistling at soccer,
yeah.
I think it's almost like, you know, how they say if you eat gizzards, you forget your relatives back
home. Yeah.
I think it was just a folklore.
It's a wife's tale.
Oh, no, it's folklore because, the piece is Chef called Chikanganwahama, which
means
forget
your
cousins.
I don't eat gizzards.
He's being a salad again.
For the audience, my hands are up. I have given up.
You accept me as I am.
I have one more controversial meat he doesn't
eat.
I think we all
or
beef liver.
I can eat liver. It's not a fail, but I can eat liver. I can survive.
So are you only eat T-bone?
Do you eat kidneys?
No, I don't like kidneys.
But you will have a steak and kidney pie.
No, I'll pick a steak pie. If forced, I'll eat the steak and kidney.
But that's the thing. Most people aren't forced. Most people choose the steak and kidney pie over a steak pie.
I'll take a steak pie. But I do like capenta. Which is what's the English? Is it anchovies?
It's capenta. Capenta is actually the English word.
But anchovies are like super salty though.
Because capenta is my tip.
That's the preservation.
So capenta is
the English word. I like capenta. I can't do
wait. Chef, can you explain to the audience what capenta is?
Well, it's almost, I guess, like an anchovy. It's found in Cariba, which is one of the largest man-made lakes on the continent. So they dry it.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually dry. So we usually eat it dry. So the dried, obviously, we soak it to remove some of that salt.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cook it and have it with our sadza, which is our kind of staple, which is our cornmeal porridge, a stiff cornmeal porridge. Some people then have it fresh, which you then obviously dredge and have it like fish and chips kind of thing.
Yeah. Capenta is nice.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I'm a big capenta enthusiast. Yeah.
I like the fresh capenta. I don't like
Oh, you don't like the dried
one? I don't do the dried.
Okay.
Chef, when I met you, we had a pretty in-depth conversation about cooking with goat. You shared that that is one of your new endeavors that you enjoy. For our listeners, please share with us your favorite goat cuts.
I love me some goat intestines. I'd rather tripe that's tied with the intestine.
Goat tripe. Should we call goat it goat tripe? Tripe? Yeah, it's intestine. Goat tripe. Yeah.
You guys are killing me.
Beautiful. Hey, could be. This is indigenous
food. I think that's why
food.
You even brought this up, right?
That's my favorite. Wait, favorite
indigenous
meal.
Food.
So I'm going to tell you my favorite part of the goat.
Mm-hmm.
The head.
Yes, thank you.
I was the only one.
Oh, my God. The goat
Wait,
head.
What?
The goat head.
This is a thing?
Oh my God! Do you know what? Do you know what?
Akumbi, how
I like that. This is not a. I like
no.
That.
This is informative for me.
Very, very.
So I'm gonna say this. Right? I like that a lot of people don't like the head because for me that's like the best meat.
So you
best
eat
meat on the whole on the head. Whole animal. No, the it's
go ahead. It's cow head, fish head. They're all good.
It's the meat. Yeah,
and so it's I'll a tell different you. Kind of texture.
Oh, so I'm gonna say this: if you were to scrape the meat off the goat and put it in the plate, I think people would be like, "Oh, this is the best meat I've ever tasted."
So
it's just that.
Off of the correct face. Me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, off of the face.
I'm pretty sure I remember this goat head cooking process, and it starts off with a very critical step of burning off the goat hair.
Yeah,
off the head.
Even the cow same thing.
I've heard that stinks. Is that true?
Yes. And that's where my story of my first experience was going with this, because maybe I did tell you the story, but my cousin and I at my grandma's house in Chitungwiza, he came up with the bright idea of having goat head. This would be my first time, and I let him take the steering wheel on this one. We had extracurricular activities beforehand.
Meaning drinking?
Yes, drinking.
Okay. drinking Olympics.
Yeah. Drinking, to keep it PG-13, drinking. But we got carried away and we left that head burning away in the pot. There's the burning process, and then there's the boiling process, I believe, that follows. And in that boiling process, we kept refilling the pot up with water. And then we got really, really carried away, and the water ran out of the pot, and the goat head just continued to dry up and burn in the pot. And when I say that the house stank, like the goat... Crow, is that the right word? Crow? Goat crow?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother was away on vacation when this happened. Tapio would try to pour his wine with the top on.
Why you
that was hilarious.
Snitch.
But I'll never forget the look on my grandma's face when she walked into her house and she just smelled that burnt goat head. She wanted to go back to the rural area where she came back from.
And doesn't come off the kittens.
Oh, my goodness. No, that was like a three-month smell in the house. I remember coming back. I was doing my internship at the time. Shout out Talco. Come home every day. Open the door. Smells like burnt goat hair. Every day. Every day for like 3 months straight. So like the smell of goat is one that has stuck with me since that experience. Other than that, I still love eating goat. The tripe that you mentioned, big fan. Grew up in Mutoko eating it. I don't think I've quite seen anyone else do the twisting of the intestines and everything. I remember you mentioning that those are usually stuffed with something. Or they can be stuffed.
I think that was just now I was saying, you know, I would then try and
stuff. Oh, you'd experiment with
experimenting, but
yeah.
Traditionally they just tie it together and just boiled.
Okay.
So yeah.
So for me, a story about a goat. When I realized that the goat head was the ish, was my uncle's. So you know how you go back to your village and then you know you're there. They slaughter the goat, they give everybody the meat.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, like, how come my uncle is bodyguarding this?
The head?
The head, like,
it's what's a process. Going on here? It's a process.
Right? Yeah. So the head of the goat was in the pot for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're like, okay, this old man doesn't want to share this meat. Let's steal this pot. Me and my other cousin, we stole the pot. And then we had that meat, and we're just like, oh.
The goat head.
Did you, when a light bulb rings in your head, like, oh, okay. So this is why.
Yeah. Chef, I think next time, if we are ever all in Zimbabwe at the same time, we need to introduce Kumbi to all the livestock heads.
We need to.
And I think we should rank them from top to bottom because.
Guess what? We will not be doing that.
No, we will. We will. For the culture. For you specifically.
For you.
But if we had to rank them, Chef, what is your head ranking?
Pause. Now, I'm saying that right now. Hey, yo. Don't do chef like that. That's crazy.
Hey, relax. No Diddy. You have a dirty mind because I wasn't even thinking that. I was just looking at a goat. I was imagining a goat head.
Head wrecking. All
right.
This.
So, livestock head. We're going to go cow head, pig head, chicken head, goat head.
Chicken head. Who eats a chicken head? Well, I don't know.
For the people out there that are listening and eat chicken head, shout out to you.
I do not eat.
Wait, have you had chicken head?
I've had a chicken head before, but there's not much there. Yeah, there's not much there. You're mostly eating the chicken neck.
Like if you said fish head, I would understand.
Guys.
No, I mean, goat head is my favorite.
All right, goat head.
So, I'm with him. Goat head is my favorite, and then the cow.
Whoa. These questions were for the chef. Okay. Relax.
Now, goat head is my favorite, flavor-wise. Obviously, cow head is more meat, bigger tongue. I love tongue as well.
Ox tongue, yeah.
Ox tongue is really good. Mm-hmm. Ox cheek. So, yes. Yeah, but flavor-wise, like just goat head is my favorite.
Wow, goat head is still taking the lead.
It's going to have to be fish. Fish head.
Wow. Yeah. You see, and I didn't even list fish head on my list. Why fish head, actually? Because that's I feel like you don't get that commonly with your fish. Unless in the Americas, you will go to Latin America or African restaurants. They'll give you the fish head, but most American cuisine doesn't give you.
I think it's almost like the goat. The fish head has different flavors from different parts of the fish head.
Mm-hmm.
It's got oils in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Got the eyes that you can suck on and stuff like that.
The eyes, brain. Chef.
I'm with Chef.
He gave the eyes an honorable mention.
Because, do you know what? A lot of people get hung up on what it is rather than how it tastes. Right? Because the fish head, you got the brains.
Yeah.
You open it up, you have the little thingy that has is different textures.
I feel like the fish head, if you do eat it, I've never really delved into it, but I feel like if I decided to eat a fish head, I could eat it in 3 bites.
No.
Is that? Or is it like intricate?
It's just with the big fish.
Okay. So it can't just be like a normal fish head.
But the big ones, I mean.
Then it's a process.
On top of the head, and then you've got the cheeks.
Mm.
You've got inside, you've got the brain, fats, a lot of stuff.
So where does pig head rank on this for you? Because I think pig head, for me, is if it's not number one, it's number two.
It's a bit too early.
I'm not a chef, but for me, goat head, undefeated. Mm-hmm. Undefeated.
Goathead, I can agree. I and honestly agree with you guys.
On after Goathead, I'm going with the cow. I'm going with the cow.
I'm the only porkhead guy.
I'm going with the cow.
Kumbi's looking at us like this conversation should not be happening.
No, wait. Do you know what? He hasn't had goathead.
Or cowhead, or pighead.
I used to think. Wait,
fam, I don't eat head. Pause. That's crazy.
You know, we're going to pause all day. Yeah,
we might have to pivot this discussion soon.
Yeah.
The goat is the goat.
We've been talking about head for way too long.
Wait. The goat is the goat. That's all I can say.
But I just wanted to highlight our indigenous livestock.
Mm-hmm.
The head is a piece that we cherish. Just like the tripe, just like the feet, just like other parts you wouldn't really find in American grocery stores. But I remember some butchers will give you some of those cuts in America. I think it really depends on the type or the background of the butcher.
I feel like it's conditioning, culture and conditioning, right? Because
In essence, it's called it's lamb, actually. They use sheep head and they call it a smiley.
Oh, yeah. Sheep head.
Yeah,
it's called a smiley. Head. Okay.
So, yeah.
I imagine it would be like goat head kind of.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic, I'm still stuck on the thing you mentioned about your tribe experience was with Italian cuisine.
No, wait. So I was going to ask this question. I didn't get to it. He said tripe with anchovies, right? Yes.
And something else.
Yeah. Anchovies, mint, dry mint, chili flakes, white wine.
Was it in a pasta? Being Italian?
I had it with risotto.
Oh. Okay. You see, this is a meat meal that I would want to try.
Scale of 1 to 10, chef. Was that
amazing.
A 10?
It was amazing. It was probably 9.
Really?
9? Yeah.
Mm.
His 9 is like a
I know. His 9 is like our 10. For all of us.
For all of us, for sure.
Yeah.
So, of all the countries you've been, right, which would you say has the best cuisine?
Wow. Oh, that's tricky. That's really tricky because I think food, how delicious food is, I think it's a kind of like a function of context and where you're at in your food journey as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, more in my food journey. So Italy was good because it was in my curiosity phase and just the concept of fresh ingredients, cooked simply, and just, you know, it was tasty in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I developed kind of in a culinary sense, Ethiopian cuisine, because I stayed in Ethiopia for 2 years.
You're eating tibs.
Yes,
tibs and injera.
I actually have a lot of the spices back home.
Mm-hmm. I actually like Ethiopia.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also now because of my whole Afrofusion,
mm-hmm.
I love West African cuisine.
Okay.
And Ethiopian. So Italian, always special in my heart because it kind of brought forth that kind of fusion.
Kind of element. Opened your mind.
And yes, exactly. And the importance of ingredients.
So would you say like food, like for me, music, right? My favorite album, like always points to a point in my life. Like, for example, My Dark Twisted Fantasy by Kanye West. It was a very interesting time in my life.
Was that a dark period?
I just broken up with someone. So like that album always sticks in my head, right?
I wonder who.
Wow.
But anyways, that sticks in my head. Yeah. So is it the same way with food for you? Like that in that period of time when you were in Italy, it was a special time or maybe it was whatever it is. That's what also like makes it.
I'm kind of like a curious chef because I'm a chef that does not like to eat. I'm a chef that likes to cook and to cook for others.
Okay.
And hence they appreciate.
Mm.
And I'm a chef that appreciates flavor. So for me, this is a never-ending journey. Mm. So I don't think I can ever have a favorite because I'm constantly learning, constantly discovering.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I can ever have a favorite. I can have moments like the egg, like the tribe,
yeah,
that have informed what I've become.
Mm.
But I would never say that, oh, that was special. It was just, you know, part of the journey. And I'm in a continuous journey. I'm always curious. I always have a recipe book. I always travel with the recipe book. That's mm-hmm. all I read. And so I'm always learning. So I don't think I actually have a favorite cuisine.
Do you know what's interesting for me, right? We're in Bethesda, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There used to be, I don't even know if it's still there, a pizza place.
Okay.
Right on this road, actually, mm-hmm. Woodmont. But it was like an Italian place where they brought the brick from Italy, literally from Italy,
mm-hmm.
rebuilt the oven. And the pizza that they made was pizza, the dough, mm-hmm. the cheese, tomatoes, and basil.
And that was so it's just like very plain margarita? Italian pizza, like. Yeah.
Sounds like
from what I understand, that's a traditional.
But it was amazing.
Yeah.
Listen, that was the best pizza I ever had, right? Right?
Wow. Yeah.
Better than the pepperoni pizza, the
wow.
Pineapple, Hawaiian, all the pizzas that we had. It was just that little simple pizza with, it was just cheese, tomatoes, basil.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best pizza I had. So sometimes it's just like, it's kind of like, our cuisine, like in Zim, is very simple. It's
whoa.
Chef. Hold up. Before you go there,
yeah.
I was actually going to ask Chef, right?
Yeah.
Because I always have this debate with friends and family of like,
mm-hmm.
I think, and I'm not trying to be political here, but because of the British colonizing Zimbabwe until 1980,
mm-hmm.
our food has become so bland that we don't necessarily have a distinct like type of food. Like where, you know, if I go to Mozambique, I'm going to have prawns that are spiced in a specific way. If I go to West Africa, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. I'm gonna have fufu or kenke and all these different types of food.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they're not there in cassava leaf. I think that we just don't market it well enough. So no, it's true. Because how many Zimbabwean restaurants do you know? Respectfully.
Wait. I'm gonna let Chef answer, and then I want to give my answer because I feel passionate. But
this is a serious very question.
Passionate about this
topic. is why I was so happy to have Chef T here,
yeah.
because like this is an amazing experience that he's curated for us. But how many Zimbabwean chefs do we know that have made it thus far?
But that's a problem.
That's true.
How many restaurants? Know? No, it's there are other countries that have very small populations that still have their food and culture being consumed. Thailand is not a big country.
No, neither is Liberia, and we get a lot of their food.
So what would you say is, like, what needs to change for Zimbabwe to put its food on the map, right? Because you fuse a lot of other foods with Zimbabwean food. But I'm just saying, if I were to make a Zimbabwean dish, right,
mm-hmm. mm.
how do we make that appealing to the masses?
Okay, so...
Let me just say, I'm confident in Chef's answer. But let him have the mic.
Let him cook.
How about let Chef cook?
Let him cook. Let's let Chef answer. Yeah.
Right. So, first and foremost, I will agree that there's a stage in our history where our food was halted in terms of the creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've gone around the country now through various programs, talking to people within the rural areas. Who are still, I think, the custodians of what our food is.
Right.
And I've discovered very interesting things whilst I've been out there. Sesame is indigenous.
So we have sesame.
We have sesame. It's
called sesame seeds.
It's called, I think it's called Usika.
Okay.
Wow.
So, And then we've got tamarind is indigenous. Loads of tamarind.
And the Mexican cuisine has a lot of that. Even the candies they make.
Yeah, they make tamarind
candy. Yeah.
So there's a lot of these things which I believe had we not encountered colonization or whatever, that creativity would have gone ahead. So for instance, there's a dish in Rusinga that I came across called Mabumbe, which is seeds, maybe watermelon seeds, pumpkin seeds. They just toast them, grind them, sieve them out, and then they use a tomato to bind them, form them into balls, and then that's kind of like a mint alternative. Essentially, that's a vegan dish.
Wow.
Because they cook those in like cowpea leaves, nyemba. And then because they are seeds, they've got oil, so you don't use oil. Once you cook them within, like boil them with the leaves, the oils are released, and then that serves as oil. Without binding with tomato, you can actually add that powder into vegetables, which will give it oil.
Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. So would you say that these are like all recipes that are regional but haven't gone further because nobody has taken the time to market or maybe even write a recipe book and put it out for the masses, right? So it just stays within specific regions.
So you can't market what you don't know. We are ignorant of what Zimbabwean food is, I included. So that is actually part of my kind of like
the journey, right?
My journey and what right now what I'm working on is actually going around Zimbabwe. To document all these things and write a Zimbabwean food encyclopedia so that the young chefs and the chefs following me can have a reference point where they want to find out what ingredients are available to Zimbabwe. And once the chefs have got the ingredients, they can then
start
you know, fusing and maybe just telling their story. So I can see a dish and I can then tell my story through that dish. But whenever I do my food, my fusion, I write my menus in Shona or Ndebele, depending on the dish, so that people can ask, what is this?
What is this?
So that I explain it.
And another thing, right, is a lot of, like, I didn't know this, right? The food that we eat, like our indigenous, like cornmeal, corn is a New World food. So corn came from the Americas. It's not from Africa.
Yeah.
But
the maize, especially the specific brand of maize. I think you mentioned that when I met you at the tasting, first tasting, that the maize that we eat in Zimbabwe is indigenous to Mexico.
So you would think that okay, our food is maize or corn, but our food is more sorghum, millet, small all grains, these other grains,
the small grains.
So and we don't necessarily highlight that enough.
Take it back. I just want to say something before we go.
Yeah.
Like maize is not indigenous.
Right.
But maize for me now is traditional.
No, it's traditional.
Yeah.
So, but also you have to realize that they've been hybrids. They were the heirloom, the first seeds, which have the colors, the red, the black, the red,
purple,
whatever.
Black,
And traditionally we then smoke them, preserve them, grow them for the next season. So actually, there are stories whereby there's a red maize called Tsuragudu, which they say, folklore or truth, they would plant around the field, the edges. And because the baboons don't like red, think it's blood, they would open the maize and see the red and run away. So it's called Tsuragudu. There's also another one which they say, if you eat it and you've been having one gentle child, once you eat that, obviously there may have been some processes. You then have a different gender the next time.
Really?
So yeah. So the thing is, colonization stopped one that all these things were not passed down, and we really took on colonization. We really accepted it to a point where
we
didn't then pass down recipes. So if recipes are not passed down, you meet West Africans, they all have a family jollof recipe or family injera, whatever recipe. We don't have that. So how can you expect to have a Zimbabwean restaurant when Zimbabweans themselves are not proud of their cuisine? It has not been passed down. Our parents didn't tell us. Only when I talk to my mom or someone, like, oh, I went to Rusinga and they were eating Archer nuts. Mm-hmm. Did you know that Archer nuts?
No,
I did not. I know that. That. Yeah. I had a friend that 2 years, yes. 3 years ago. 3 years ago. She's like, yeah, we used to eat that, but never told me. She never passed that down to me.
Mm-hmm.
So because we haven't passed down the cuisine, who's going to proliferate it around the world?
So are you going to release a book?
Yeah, definitely. That's the plan.
Yeah, okay.
Chef, I want to be part of this book because I can only add like two recipes. But...
Go ahead and tell it.
Yeah, but absolutely. Honestly, I think what you're doing is amazing. Because putting our culture back on the map for the younger generation
to be able to see it is really necessary. But Chef, we're going to find some investors. We need to open a restaurant in D.C.
D.C.?
Yes.
I'm opening a restaurant. What are we talking about?
Oh, I know.
I've read it. No, I'm serious.
We need to open one in D.C. Yeah,
I'm opening a restaurant.
Okay.
For sure.
And we're gonna do 100% indigenous, these are my ideas.
You're giving away the
ideas. Let's copyright.
There are people who went to Chimanimani, just as an aside, something interesting. They went to Chimanimani and found out there are more than 23 edible vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
Like you guys know spinach, rib. There are 23. More than 23 edible vegetables.
That's in crazy. Chimanimani. That grow in Chimanimani.
Yes.
And that's so close to my commercial. Forage
leaves that you can find. Man. So anyone tells you Zimbabwean food is boring or not interesting, they don't know Zimbabwean. We don't know Zimbabwean food.
But we don't know.
Exactly.
I think that's the problem.
Here's another thing, right? You know, for us, all that stuff like cassava and stuff. We used to eat that.
Cassava leaf?
Yeah.
Cassava
leaves, cassava root.
Yeah. It goes back to those ingredients. You're those saying you don't eat kumbi.
No, that's I don't eat tripe.
Yeah, but I'm saying
to do with vegetables and spices.
No, it has nothing to do with vegetables and spices, but I'm saying those are still cuts that are popular with the
That's fine.
Yeah.
But I'm saying my vegetables, right? He just mentioned that there's 23 different vegetables.
Yeah, and I was actually about to get to that because Chef made a...
All you need to do is put the go-ahead in these tacos.
Wow. And he'll be all right.
And it is okay. You'll eat it.
Put it in a taco, he'll be all right.
and then call it something bougie.
Chef, when I was telling these guys about the meal you cooked at the first tasting, going back to the first tasting, you made a rendition of Sadza Nemuriwo Nenyama.
Which is in English?
Sadza, kale, and beef stew.
Cornmeal.
Cornmeal. So it's more like a hardened grits, which is the staple food of most southern and eastern African countries.
Polenta.
That's actually very much more modernized term for that. And you made one of the most interesting dishes I've ever had in my life. I think the one thing I told these guys that was more interesting to them was that you didn't just use normal traditional cornmeal. You used, was it Ufu?
I used pearl millet. Pearl millet or monga in our local.
Monga, millet. Mm. So that was step one. Already foreign to me as a Zimbabwean because I grew up eating your normal cornmeal. But man, oh man, I had never had deep fried sadza in my life.
It's true. Everything tastes better fried, right?
No, it does. But this was just.
Chef,
it was really good.
You held back on us.
No, we got Sunday.
We got Sunday.
We're getting deep fried
Sunday. We get.
But I just want people, and I actually want to know how you came around to thinking about deep frying sadza because this is just I think it's innovative and very creative. So please do share with us how you came to that.
So that was actually based off the dish I did in the final of Better of the Chefs. So I took part in our version of Chopped.
Mm-hmm.
Those in America may know Chopped. So that was our version of Chopped. And I took part in the first season. And I was a winner of that show. And in the final, we cooked our version of Sadza Nyama. So my thought process was to take that traditional dish, obviously incorporate a bit of, you know, international cooking methods or processes, and make it lighter, because our idea of eating is like a big mold of sadza.
And that's so another thing.
I just wanted something that you can eat with a
fork. It was like the perfect serving meal.
So my thought process was with that dish was using, so I'm also in a movement where we're trying to get us to go back to our traditional foods.
Mm-hmm.
And maize is not one of them, and it's actually maybe one of the causes of some of our latent illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
But so small grains are what we
traditionally ate.
So that's why I chose to use pearl millet, which is interesting in that they toast it first. And it actually has the aroma of almost basmati rice when they toast it.
Really?
And when they say in the village, when you know someone is making
millet,
pearl millet or munga, because you can smell it from the road.
Oh, wow.
So it's aromatic. So I decided to use that. But also, we also sometimes ferment our maize meal, making the sadza a bit sour.
Mm-hmm.
So I put a bit of, in that sense, I put sour milk, but it's difficult to find. Yes, I put some cottage cheese just to try and mimic that sourness.
Yeah.
So cook the sadza, make the, add the what you call it, the sour milk, and then let it set. And then obviously breadcrumb it in panko breadcrumbs, which are quite crispy, and fry. So it was more so soft and crunchy texture. So I like to play with textures as well. And the nyama, obviously, it's our meat. In that case, I used ribeye. And then I made a jus, a red wine jus, but finished off with some biltong. So got biltong, which is a cured meat in the south of Africa, usually South Africa. And just chopped it up and then added to finish the jus, just to accentuate
that meat. So you put that, mixed it with regular meat as well.
So I grilled the ribeye, so it was a steak. And then I made a jus, a red wine jus. And then I added the biltong into the jus.
Wow.
So that it has the added meatiness.
Chef, and I think you're holding back on us. I want that.
Sunday. And then I did vegetables. So I use mustard greens, which are my favorite. Tsunga.
I remember, you could taste the mustard on the...
Yeah. Mustard.
Honestly,
I added usawi mix, which is also like a seasoning that is popular in Zimbabwe. So I finished off the vegetables with a bit of usawi mix.
I had that plate and I felt like Chef T took us 1,000 years in the future, because that, how can I say it? It was simple, but yet so sophisticated.
That recipe sounds like something I want to eat every day.
You'll have to eat
it. And that's what I'm saying. It was simple. It sounds simple, but yet so sophisticated.
Chef, I'm going to publish your book. Just so I can have the recipe first.
I think it's... we'll talk offline. But there's a lot that needs to be said.
In case you're wondering what it looks like.
For the viewers listening, he's showing us a picture of
the plate, the actual plate.
Yeah, that he's talking about.
It almost looks like
your traditional sadza nyama.
It almost looks like a corn bread.
So this is haifiritz.
No, I thought it was different. That's not the nyama. Oh, I think it's something else.
So this was cornbread different to with some collard greens on the top.
Yeah.
But I can still do the fried side of steak.
From mustard collard greens.
Yeah.
Oh, does it still work?
It can still work. Yeah.
I want to taste the biltong, if I'm going to be honest.
There was biltong tips. Meal.
No, I bought it from Zim.
Biltong?
I bought that biltong from Zim. From Billy's Meats in Zim.
And then even more zoomed
in. Sadly, it's done.
Even more zoomed in.
Wow. Also, our meal is going to be different on Sunday.
Well, maybe that dish.
Don't tell the listeners we're about to have another big plate.
Oh, yeah.
It's not for them. It's for us. It's for us.
You're leaking intel.
By Giancarlo.
So Chef, we need to figure out a way to have a restaurant with all of this food. Like
offline, my guy. You can't offline. Give all the sauce. You can't give all the sauce.
Because this, yeah, it has to be shared with the world.
But I really do implore the listeners, when his book releases, for y'all to purchase it and check it out, because the meal we had today was fantastic.
Remind us the Instagram, D Ankara.
D Ankara.
So it's D Ankara Chef. So DeAnkara Chef. Chef.
And actually, before we start winding down, I think a lot of listeners, especially our Zimbabwean listeners, they'll be wondering how you came up with the Ankara Chef, considering it does sound a little West African. Like, do you want to just share how you came to that name with us?
All right. So during the Battle of the Chefs, I decided to wear Ankara pants, which is Ghanaian African print, mainly to stand out in the show so that people can have a reference point.
Ah. Okay.
But after the show, and as I was discovering myself, I realized that my food is colorful and bold, like African print. And then obviously the Afrofusion. Mm-hmm. So the Ankara Chef, D, just French for the. So the Ankara African Fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Colorful, bold food chef. So that's what it is.
Coming to DC.
Yeah, no, because earlier you did mention that you had started to have more of a palate for West African food. So.
Yeah, I mean, I like spice.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously West African food is very spicy, mm-hmm. but they have like an assortment of ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Their palate is very diverse, but that applies to the whole of Africa. So for now, not mm-hmm. for now, I am a chef that appreciates African food, African ingredients, and just the stories behind our food and the culture behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's Angola, whether it's Mozambique, Nigeria, Algeria, Tunisia, Ethiopia,
mm-hmm.
anything from Africa, I'm really interested in, and I'm curious about it. And I then obviously give it my own spin, just to bring it into the 21st century and also just to celebrate it, I guess.
So when you look at all the, say you've been in DC, you've been in Rome, Addis Ababa, Zimbabwe, obviously.
South Africa.
Would you say that, like, specifically pertaining to Zimbabwe, you know, there's this stigma that our food is bland, right? Is that the case? Is that more of what we've become? What is it, would you say?
Okay, so for me, I call our food nuanced.
Okay.
That's my word for our cuisine. It's a nuanced cuisine, which means that the flavor is not so prominent.
Okay.
You can never compete against a Scotch bonnet, let's be honest. Like, if you eat West African food mm-hmm. with Scotch bonnet, it's going to hit you in the mouth and your palate. And
right.
Whoa. So you can't compete with that in terms of like flavor forwardness. But I think our food is nuanced. That's why we like goat head.
Mm-hmm.
If you're asked to describe it, you can't really pinpoint what it is, but if you've eaten it, you know it.
You know, it's nuanced. You immediately know the smell.
Exactly.
Taste. Yeah.
No pee. You know, you can't describe it, but it's nuanced. So it's got a nuanced cuisine. So if you're trying to compare Zimbabwean cuisine or Zimbabwean food or flavors with West African, with Thai, with Mexican,
mm-hmm.
we'll never add up, because those foods are really punchy with their flavor because nice. Of the chili.
Yeah.
But if we appreciate our food for what it is,
mm-hmm.
which is nuanced, in my opinion,
okay.
then we're going to find that it's something to celebrate. But if you're going to say that you can only celebrate flavor for food if it's got chili, then, you know, what's Italian food? Italian food is not very, it doesn't, there are some parts of it that have chili, but it's mainly celebrating the taste of the ingredients.
And this is going back to my statement saying that the best pizza I had was literally cheese, tomatoes, and basil. Yeah. And it sounds kind of crazy when I say
I don't think it's crazy because when I've gone to some Italian restaurants, believe it or not, margherita is my favorite.
I love margherita pizza.
It's less filling, also.
It's kind of the same thing. Is like you just have to appreciate.
And also, I think if you get the ingredients at their best, I think like any other cuisine, that food is going to be tasty. So if you pick your greens at their best, if you pick your finger millet at its best and prepare it the best way you can, that cuisine is going to taste good. So I think that, if we become more intentional about our cuisine, and then I think we can then have the restaurants. And if we can tell the story, because like if we ourselves are not proud of it, like half the time you meet 10 people, they're going to tell you Zimbabwean food is boring. Zimbabweans will tell you that. They don't appreciate
that. And the problem is that because we grew up in Harare and we only eat salsa
and rice
with beef stew.
That's very generous.
Heavy salt. What we eat is cornmeal, which is or polenta grits, kind of collard greens and stew. Beef,
a salty beef stew.
That's either kale,
spinach, or cabbage.
Yeah. But what we learned today is our food is so much more, right? So many different other.
Flavors. I also want to add one more thing. I think from my travels, I've discovered that we've lost our what I call our delicious. So if you go to the rural areas, then you have been there, and they say, we're going to cook this dish of this wild green that is foraged. It's so nice. It's tasty. It's like the best thing ever. You're like, whoa, wow, I'm looking forward to this. When I taste it, I'm like, ugh, this thing is sour. This thing is bitter.
No flavor,
But actually, that is what our delicious was. Exactly. So because of our refined foods that we've now had, we've lost our sense of delicious. So what is supposed to be delicious is no longer delicious.
Yeah.
So our palate is now sweet, salty, neutral.
Yeah.
So if your palate is like that, it's going to be boring.
Yeah.
West African palate has got various things as well. It's not just chili. Yeah. So because we've lost our sense of delicious, it means that what is supposed to be nice and what we're supposed to celebrate, we don't. Which means that what we eat is limited because what you're supposed to enjoy, you're no longer enjoying. It's
now limited now, right?
So clearly, that's the problem. Which is also a problem of trying to get people to eat traditional food because the texture of small grains is not like refined millimeter. You're not going to enjoy it because they're like, ugh.
Hope you have another question for you.
So, what's up,
sir? Did you ever take the stick, put some sugar on it, and stick it in the anthill and eat the ants?
What?
Yeah.
All right. Never mind.
Hey, he just hit you with a throwback. A commercial throwback.
Sugar on a stick and then serving the ants.
A lot of insects that we eat.
Yeah.
Loads of different types of
insects. It's kind of like when you spill your Kool-Aid and you see ants.
Yeah. Is that Ishwa?
Frying?
No.
Or Banklevi?
Mupani
worms.
Mupani worms?
I could be striking out. Everyone is hitting Kumbi's wickets right now.
To be fair, my cousins like to eat Ishwa. For me, I'm like, why are we eating insects? Like, respectfully.
You see, he's the salad.
But I don't deny it. I like
You don't.
I don't need it.
That would be one of my favorite times in the year. Like the rain season, like the
you would eat Ishwa.
Yeah.
And let me not say he's salad. Like I'm not considered.
By the way, we're
the lights. Put a bucket outside.
Sometimes the food is the story behind the food because when you eat that, because you gotta know that that has a lot of protein in it.
I know it has protein. I just don't eat insects.
Funny story.
Thank you very much.
Another indigenous food. Weezer.
Crossover, I love them.
Yeah. First time locusts. I ever had a Weezer was after a locust storm that just flew through Marlboro. And there was so many locusts, grasshoppers everywhere.
So you fried them proper?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Everyone was picking. Like, there was just a random locust. We were, like, playing soccer in the middle of the road. And the locust storm just randomly just hit the neighborhood hard. And I'm talking, like, ever watched the movie A Bug's Life?
Yeah.
When the locust storm happens?
Yeah.
This happened before I watched A Bug's Life. So by the time I saw A Locust Storm in A Bug's Life, I knew what that was. But it's just funny to me that sometime in 1996 in New Marlboro, where that neighborhood was still starting. I mean, 1996, there was not a lot of homes in New Marlboro. Like, that part of Harare was just so desert. But we caught, like, a locust storm that just came. I think there's some nearby farms from there.
So I know this one.
And people just were picking up locusts left and right, roasting muma pans and everything. Some were roasting on sticks, but most were roasting in pans, squeezing out the locust guts. And yeah, but that was my first, like, interesting encounter with locusts. Monthly bee. You said you don't mess with Mopane worms.
Yeah, yeah.
Ishwar, we already touched on. But yeah, I think, like Chef T, like Chef T was saying, there's a whole trove of indigenous foods out there that we just kind of stopped exploring and eating.
I'm going to ask this one question. So you eat crab meat?
Yes.
Okay.
You know that. Right. You know that we drink.
That's all he has. That's all he has.
You said
we drink coffee made from okra. You know that.
I
really.
Yeah. So they call it coffee.
By the way, I love okra.
So we make coffee with okra. I mean, they just leave the seeds dry.
I love okra.
Okra.
So that you can make all
coffee,
day
coffee with okra
and put a little miripiri, which is pepper for English listeners. But yeah.
So, yeah, our food is quite diverse, interesting, and it's just us who need to break our ignorance.
No, that's true.
Yeah. We need to spread it out to the world.
And I'm glad that you're on this journey of, like, showing all the people out there that Zimbabwean food has a lot of culture. And thank you so much for your time today, and we really appreciate it. And make sure to follow him on Instagram, D Ankara Chef, and watch out for his book.
He's restaurant opening in DC.
Damn, this guy!
This guy is blowing up the spot. But
the restaurant
check out his Instagram page, and his book will be coming out very soon.
Thank you, guys. I enjoyed my time.
Chef Tafazwa, thank you so much. Cheers. And thank you for your time, for joining us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
We appreciate it.